Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, hello, and thank you for joining us at Leaving Hillsong. This is the second part of my favourite colour of Leaving Hillsong in the UK. It's really good to have you with us, everybody from Canada to Germany to Western Australia. It's a really fantastic conversation. Now, I know you love part one. I was still laughing and getting goosebumps yesterday, so I know you're going to love this episode. There's a lot of changes going on out there. And one of those is that some amazing person came in and sorted the art issue I was having with Apple. And so now we are on Apple Podcasts. Updates for this podcast are mainly on Facebook and Insta. Everything's under Leaving Hillsong, Twitter, all of those things. Patreon, Leaving Hillsong. It's amazing what you can build today in total isolation. So here's the final part two of my favourite colour, Emily's story.
And I started to spiral, I think, into a bit of chaos. And it was my parents, they rescued me a bit and they pulled me out after a couple of years. Just said, we don't think this is doing you any good. I think you might need to come home.
Tell me about when things start changing, when you start going, you know, where does it stop being, this is fantastic, I can't get enough? And when does it start going,
Yeah. Some of the red flags, I suppose, were, like I said, you know, the separateness, the difference in aesthetics. I didn't like the emphasis it had on this kind of man-woman relationship that was the goal. When colour would come along, she'd talk about weight, Bobby would. She'd talk about weight a lot. And I'm not skinny. I'm never going to be skinny. But there wasn't an everybody is beautiful. It was a, you know, this body is, and you should talk about if Brian would go away, she'd tone up and lose a couple of pounds and try and kind of be appealing to him so that he didn't stray.
Oh my God.
I'd listen to those, you know, women you need to kind of keep your man interested.
So that's not a one-off kind of thing, like a random quote recently. Bobby said, you know, she got taken out of context, she doesn't really care about those things, and it was just a one-off from 20 years
ago. That's bullshit. She doesn't realize the damage she's done. She doesn't realize the trail of destruction she's left behind by saying these things that she just thinks it's so, you know, funny, and she talks like this, and it's really, really cool, isn't it? I mean. You know, but the fact that I can do that impression, how many 20 years later, just tells you, you know, she doesn't realize the trail of destruction she's left, because she says these things off the cuff and she gets, you know, she gets a buzz out of being quirky, funny Bobby who is a bit ditzy and, you know, this whole time. But I was listening to those words. I was listening to her stand up and say, you know, you need to keep your man because you need to look good for him so he doesn't look anywhere else. And but when she said, you know, women, you don't want like a crane to have to roll you over in bed to, oh God, you know what?
That's her famous one. I wonder how unhappy those plastic Stepford wives are as well, because the difference is a pursuit of one particular goal, like you're saying, like it's just one.
They all look the same. That was the thing for me as well. They all started looking the same. So it was very much this kind of like long hair, kind of nice clothes, designer clothes, you know, and it was a very similar look in everyone. They were all kind of the same shape. They were all kind of the same size. And people started changing from what I knew of them back in the original days of the small theatre days. People I was close to started changing their accent, started changing their clothes, started, you know, being very different. And I was kind of, I wanted to go along with it, but I knew my limitations. I couldn't do that because physically, I just couldn't. And financially, I couldn't keep up. But back to kind of Bobby and the trail of destruction she left, I still think about those things kind of 20 years later. And she's, you know, living her millionaire lifestyle that she just thinks is okay to say these things off the cuff and apologize for them later. But it was too late when the words left her mouth.
Why do you think they've had such a strong impact all this time later? Like you were saying, you've done work, you've been through a lot more in life and it's still with you. And also I'm wondering about the money, the financial
ruin.
Financial ruin. If somebody said, you know, oh, well, you could have sorted that out by now. You can learn new rules. You can learn new habits.
Then that person's never been in a cult culture such as that. And I have had people, you know, I'll kind of share that I was brought up in church with people and they just think it was kind of like this little village church, a little C of E church that you went on a Sunday and you did your thing and then you lived your life outside of that. I don't think people who have never been through like a evangelical experience, particularly evangelical fundamentalists, when they haven't been through that, it's really hard to explain. And it's really hard to get some common ground or common understanding. Actually, it's really hard to get empathy from those people. Because when I talk to people who've been through it, whether it was my church at home or whether it was a Hillsong church, we can talk on a level that only we understand. We'll have common traumas. We'll have common lifestyle habits. We'll have common language. I spend a bit of time kind of talking to people who've left just the church I grew up in and stuff. And we talk about particularly the music and how weird it is that still we've been out of church for however long and it will take one song and I could cry or I could really feel it and get excited about it. And actually there's kind of more like pop songs now and chart songs who have a very similar sound to Hillsong songs now. And I have this playlist now called Sounds Like God. I don't know how it all happened, how the cultures became crossed. There's artists who I'll go, oh, I wonder if they used to be a Christian. For example, I'll hear Ed Sheeran, I'll hear Lewis Capaldi, and they've all got little kind of chord patterns that remind me of church.
Okay.
And certain kind of core song structures and, you know, the classic Christian build up. So it has the chorus and then all of a sudden it goes quiet and they all sing and then it builds up just with the drums and it kind of then it builds momentum and then it's back into the chorus. There's lots of those kind of going around now. So I have this playlist on my Spotify that sounds like God. So I've collected all these songs that sound like church songs but aren't church songs. I'll share it because it's almost like I get this little fix from it.
Dopamine central.
And I was like, revival in the church, down. Yeah, man. But I remember that'll take me back to like being 10, sitting with my headphones on my bed. The kind of full circle that I've come now in terms of my belief and my understanding of what the hell life is all about is quite, I would say, I don't know what, I don't care, it's me. I'm not going to make any apologies for it. This is me. But I've decided and I've realised that the God that I was singing to and searching for and praying to and hoping for to answer my prayers is me. And I'm the person who is in control or out of control, depending on how I am. But I'm the one who has responsibility for all the choices that I make. There's no external force that I've got to hope for and sing to get their attention and pray right and do right things and, you know, tick the boxes. I am that person. I'm a divine person. I am. And I, when I actually listen to God songs now, I sing them to the God within me, the goddess within me. I sing them to the forces of the collective consciousness that we are as human beings together. And I sing them with a whole different perspective. And don't get me wrong, I will go and sing God songs every now and again. I'll put them on the, you know, on the playlist. I'll raise my hands. I'll close my eyes. I'll cry sometimes. You know which one gets me? Peace Be Still by Hope Darst. It was on a secular playlist at one point on Spotify, but the words are peace be still, you are here for it as well. Even when my, was it even when my, I will trust the voice within. And, you know, I started singing that to myself. And when I hear it now, I sing that to me because I'm in control now. I'm not waiting for God, this person in the sky who's going to watch my videotape and judge me. Only I can do that. And I can decide who I allow into my space. No one's going to make me feel like I used to feel back then. Sounds like a song itself. But no one has that power anymore. Probably about five years ago or something, I got rid of 99% of kind of church Hillsong people on my Facebook, because every time I saw it, I was just dead annoyed. And I was just like, oh, shut up, you know, shut up. You know, your church is built on a child abuser. Why are you supporting this? Like, I'd get really angry. So I cut them all out so that I didn't see that anymore. And if I want to go looking for it, I'll go looking for it. But I don't have to go looking for it. I'm not obsessed. I don't think I'm fully healed in any way, shape or form from that. But I am definitely more aware. I'm definitely more in control. I kind of laugh a bit now. It's still very painful when I think about how I felt and how I was really inhibited in myself back then. And I feel sorry for her. Like, I look back on that person and wish that I could be her friend to tell her it was going to be okay. My mum came down to the Colour conference because I'd been like, yeah, come to Colour. Everyone's cool and you'll love it. And actually, she didn't love it. And she was quite concerned at the messages that were being kind of shared and how they were making me feel. And I think she saw the impact on me. And so we had this kind of conversation, which was just like, you know, she didn't enjoy it. And I was a bit like, because again, I was so full on with it. I was hurt because she didn't enjoy the conference that I had nothing to do with putting on. But, you know, it was like that whole like weird feeling.
Even though you've told us just before that colour made you feel really bad and you didn't relate to it, you still loved it.
Yeah, but what I would do is I'd make excuses for them. I'd make excuses for it and I'd just put myself down and I'd just accept that. I just got to this level of acceptance that I just wasn't that going to be that person, but I'd like to try still. Reluctantly, I left London after kind of conversation with my parents. My parents came down, kind of moved me out of my house. And yeah, it was all a bit of a blur, to be honest. I can't remember too much about all of that. All I remember is that I was annoyed at having to go home and leave this place. And I kind of got withdrawal symptoms, I think, a bit. And I'd be very kind of pining for Hillsong. I remember I walked in quite a few years later. I went down to London to a service, and the people who I used to hang out with barely even acknowledged me. And weirdly, Gary acknowledged me for the first time. I remember I said I had about half a conversation with him. He actually went, oh, hey, it's you, it's Emily, isn't it? And I was just like, ah, shut up. And I never went back. But when I went home, there was very much kind of a period of like, don't you know who I am type thing. I'm the drummer from Hillsong. And I remember one time I was doing this worship back home and we were doing a sound check and I'm sound checking the drums. How are you know? Like, it was my dream setup. I had the best drum kit at Hillsong. I had all these gadgets. It was just brilliant. And then I didn't have that when I went home. And I remember doing this sound check and it took so long. I said something, and the guy who was the sound engineer said, "Oh, well, you're not at Hillsong now." And I said something back, and I just went, "Yeah, if I was at Hillsong, we'd have been finished half an hour ago." I was quite obnoxious because I really missed it. And I think I missed the experience. Like, I missed the instruments, the feeling. Because, God, there's nothing like the adrenaline when you're on stage and I was good at what I did. And so because I was surrounded by these incredible musicians as well, and it was all very, I was doing concerts essentially every week on West End stages. Like, how much better can you get in terms of a musician? The experience was thrilling, and it fueled my want to go back. Then I had to go back home, which was 250 miles back home in small town northeast, and there wasn't the same feeling. It was like we had the best of the best, and I'm not saying that was good, but for me at the time, ingrained in it and then enveloped in it, it was good. Yeah, the hardest thing was kind of people not keeping in touch. I left.
So yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about. What happened?
I mean it was pre-Facebook. So I think we maybe have MySpace around to try to find people, but
there's something to be embarrassed of, yeah.
Keeping in touch was a bit harder because place quite far away. So I think once I left, I just got forgotten. And it was really only when Facebook came along that you kind of started seeing people who you knew.
So you leave in 2003?
Yeah, Hillsong, yeah.
And go home.
I remember being at home when the first live album that I played on was released, and it was like I had to kind of like really tell people that I was on this album, because there was no credit, there was no photo. I remember having to sign, the form to say we're not going to get anything from it and stuff, and it was a bit kind of, it was a bit like an anti-climax really. So I felt the loss. So that kind of loss of status, I was no longer the chick drummer at Hillsong. I wasn't hanging out with, these really cool musicians anymore. I loved the Australian accents. I loved being surrounded by it. I love like the idea of going over there, and I never got the chance to. So I kind of missed out, and I missed all of that. It really wasn't until years and years later that I realised how much damage they'd done subconsciously.
You know, what's life been like since? Like, how does that pan out that you then become aware of this other stuff, like the religious trauma stuff? And
so I didn't really find out about religious trauma until the last couple of years. Like, I'd done a lot of work previous to that, but there was still a lot of habits and personality traits.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Like, I was riddled with anxiety at all times. I think really when I came out, that was the minute I stepped into, right, okay, I've got to do this, because if I don't, I'm not sure what's going to happen to me. And I took it at all costs, regardless of whether it hurt people. I had to do it because I was dying inside. And divorce was just not, not ever considered acceptable in the church. So, I was really, really struggling. And I joined a gay choir in Bristol. And it's a very different culture down there. It's very open, very kind of open-minded, lots of realised feminism when I got there. And I kind of was like, oh my gosh, I've been, under a rock. They allowed me to kind of step into myself there. And so I felt it just kind of went from there. no one at any point in my journey gave me any reason to think that being gay would have been okay. And I don't blame them for that. I don't blame myself either anymore. I used to, because don't forget, God's videotape was recording me. And in church, it was that close-knit community where people, you know, everyone knew what everyone was doing, and you didn't want to get labelled a backslider, and you didn't want to be flipping exercised with hands laid on and praying in that sense, because there was a lot of that in my church. It was very fruits of the spirit and manifestation in that sense. There was everyone started to do these weird stuff, and it scared me to death when I was a kid, and I didn't want to be that person who was roaring and crying, and so I just shut up. And it's a Katy Perry song, "It felt so wrong, it felt so right." It's true, but I kept that with me. Oh God, it's been a ride. And funnily enough, a couple of years, like a year or so later, a couple of years later, bipolar diagnosis was accompanied by the Greatest Showman soundtrack, This Is Me. I was in a state of mania. I was seeing colours. And then I went to the doctors and they told me it was bipolar. And once I knew that, though, it helped me to understand myself so much better. It helped me understand the wild fanatical, you know, attachments that I would seek and were part of. It helped me understand so much more. And okay, I had to go through a very catastrophic breakdown and leave the career that I'd started to build and love so much, which was teaching. But I finally, once I made that and I started to heal from that, and now I would say, you know, like, I'm still this wonderful person with great ideas and great contributions to things. It just means that my brain works a bit differently because it's been through trauma. But I have this toolbox around me now. I can put in measures where that doesn't go as far as it maybe could have done at one point. If I feel low, there's things that I can pick out my toolbox and put in place so that I can feel better. And you know, touching laminate wood in front of me, I haven't been kind of manic or depressed for quite a while. But for the first time in my life, aged 39, I'm in control far more than what I ever was. And I used to think that that would have come from God, but that's not the case. The case is it comes from me. And I can worship myself every day, just like I used to worship God.
It's just a beautiful story of freedom. I can hear it in your voice. I can taste it from here. And there's nothing that you could exchange that for on earth. Yeah, like it's just...
No, that's right.
Sorry, just tell me quickly, when you said before, my brain works a bit differently because I've been through trauma, what makes you believe that this has come from trauma?
Because it is. I think it comes from, you know, subliminal mind control. It comes from forced ideals. It comes from having to conform. It comes from just years of indoctrination, week after week after week after week. And I mean, look, I didn't leave until maybe I was about 26 or something. So that's 26 years of good kind of, you know, Bible bashing.
How long does that videotaping belief stay with you for?
No, it's definitely gone now. Only I'm accountable to myself now. But that has taken a lot of years. I would say the last 7-8 years, that's been a real kind of unpicking, unraveling, healing from. You know, I've done I am proud. I've done a lot of work to get rid of this. Now no longer do I feel burdened by the church in the impact that that's had on my life. I don't feel that necessarily as much. The way that I can play music, there's definitely an influence. It takes me 5 seconds and I could play you some offering music, you know, it's dead easy, like on the piano. But I'm okay with that because that's just part of me, because that's just something I can't control. But I can control the mindset far more now. Well, the thing is that you've got to deprogram to then reprogram. Oh, that's a nice catchy phrase, but it's true. And so I got my nose pierced first. And then when I came out, I went and got my first tattoo, which is the Hebrew Timshel. And it comes from John Steinbeck's East of Eden, where he talks about, you know, the kind of indoctrination of Christianity, and he talks about thou shalt not, and how someone grows up with those thou shalt not. You have no freedom over your choices. You just have to stick to those rules. But timsho means thou mayest, and it gives you a choice over the decisions that you make. And so when you're presented with a situation, you have control when you say, well, I could do this or I could do this. And then that becomes a free choice. And timsho becomes the most powerful word in the world because you have freedom over your decisions. And that was probably one of the defining moments of my kind of shedding. So then my hair started getting shorter. Now I'm just am who I am because this is how I've always wanted to be. This is how I've always been a tomboy. When I was a kid, I rode a BMX. I played football. I've always wanted to dress like this. I've always wanted to have my hair short. And now I can be because there's nobody telling me I can't anymore. And if they do tell me I can't, I just say, well, you have no right.
The simple purity and the beauty of that people don't understand unless they've been through that. I love that, timsho.
It takes a long time. Oh, yeah, it's great. It takes a lot of work and it takes determination because I could quite happily sit comfortably under the diagnosis of bipolar and just allow that to just rule my life. Oh, I've got bipolar, therefore I'm acting like this. Or I'm now, luckily, in a marriage where I have this woman who just gets it. And she understands so beautifully how it all works. Like, she's taken time to understand the trauma. It wasn't until we watched Jesus Camp. And when we watched that, and I said, watch this and you'll understand where I've come from. And she watched it. And I just had this panic attack and she saw the impact of how that was still impacting me. And she realized that was PTSD and helped me through that. Whereas I used to be such an anxious mess and I was scared of saying the wrong thing. And Sarah's really helped me to just heal and allowed me to break as well, because you can only heal when you've broken. Otherwise we're just putting sticking plasters over the top of it and hoping it'll go away, you know. And I was just a walking sticking plaster. And now when I've broken in half and was there thinking death was the only option because this life was just so horrendous and I'd messed up, my life was just a waste is what I thought, and I just couldn't see a way forward. I'd had a breakdown, my career had ended because teaching is just too much. Then, and I'm talking only this time last year, I have this breakdown and broken in half, and then I start rebuilding an understanding of where I'd come from and that wasn't normal. Completely all-consuming, mind-altering, damaging. But it's heartbreaking seeing what should be a very church, it's supposed to be a lovely place, you know, and love one another, and Jesus is a nice guy, and it's not. Those churches can be very damaging when it becomes so fundamental that it becomes all-consuming and addictive, I suppose, and you become fanatical. There's many of me still in there. It's not my job to say you're wrong, because it doesn't work.
Just to take responsibility for your own mistakes and your own learning, and that's very beautiful. You can't stick that onto somebody else.
The problem is, and this is why I talk, because sadly what happens if you don't have the right support network around you. So I'm lucky, I've got Sarah, she gets it. She's experienced, she hasn't experienced my trauma, but she's sat with me in the trauma. She's learned about what it was. She's learned the triggers even. Not everyone has that. There's people who end their lives who don't know what else to do and they end their life. And that is tragic. And I know I say to you, it's not my responsibility to be there and heal them and help them, you know, heal and whatever. But God, I wish we talked about it more. I'm wearing this T-shirt that says it's okay not to be okay. You know, I'm such a passionate advocate for talking and sharing stories and just reaching out. And the problem is, you know, in churches, it gets so swept under the carpet. I mean, I don't know what it's like now because I'm not part of it now, but, you know, we didn't talk about mental health. We didn't talk about depression or anxiety or, you know, Jesus was the one who was going to heal us. So let's just carry on and keep sweeping it under the carpet. And, you know, there's people dead now who didn't know any other way out. And so if I could just say anything at all, it's talk, and it's not the end. There is life after it, but my God, it's going to be painful and it's going to hurt. You might not want to keep going, but trust me that there is a better way. There is a life after church. There is a life after the trauma, and that you can live the life that you wanted to. But, you know, it's taken me nearly 40 years to realize that.
Yeah, there's life after the shame and the control and the beating self up. And
that's right. You don't have to live like that.
That constant striving. That's beautiful. Thank you so much.
I wanted to write my book. I wanted to call it God's Videotape.
Kids, some of these left behind kids. I mean, I spoke with a girl once that every time she lost her parents at the supermarket, at the shopping centre, you know what I mean? She thought the rapture had come and she'd been left behind. You can't do this to kids.
I see so many kids like 19, 18, 20, you know, never experience anything, no relationship advice, just go and get married. And that's how you can then, you'll have kids and, you know, then you're allowed to have sex. And it's like, oh God, it's so much more.
It'll all just work itself out after the wedding.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why so many of us are divorced, because we were children practically when we were getting married. You know, I was a bit older, actually. I was more 24. That's insane. There's one thing that I really, really wish and I'm sad about is when I first met my now best friend, I met her at work and she said, Emily, you remind me of like a 20-year-old. And I didn't understand what she meant by that. And I realized what I was doing in my 30s was I was regressing almost to my 20s, that I'd missed out living. And I was remorseful about it because I was like, God, I could have done so much in my 20s that I was guilt shamed into even thinking about, that it took me to my 30s to then, you know, shed. The more and more I kind of did my healing, she'd be like, yeah, you're about 26 now. Like, it was quite funny. I definitely had an absent period of time where I was married and living this life that was expected of me, but deeply unhappy and missing out on what I thought maybe could have shaped me. So now I'm kind of like this 39-year-old who actually feel about 28. And that's quite common. Very naive in terms of oversharing and, you know, intensity of friendships. And now I can get it. Now I understand it more and I'm far more like in control, and I'm very, very selective of who I let into my energy field, if you like. But it's very common. And I think we need to talk about religious trauma syndrome more, down to being able to define what your favorite color is. I only wear black. I literally only wear black because I haven't got an idea of what suits me. I wear very basic kind of clothing. The thing I'm most proud of is my hair, and I can just about kind of pull it together. But you ask me to go, if you give me £1,000, and said, go shopping, get whatever you want, I wouldn't have a clue where to start, because we just get told that it's not for pleasure, that we shouldn't be living for pleasure, we should be living for God. And, you know, anything kind of extravagant is gluttonous. Aspect down to the music you listen to, the things that you wear, you know.
Only other person I had come across is called Dr. Marlene Winnell. She writes this book called Leaving the Fold, and I read this in 2005, and she said, some people don't even know what their favorite color is. And
no, I'm more than all right. Like, I think that's been the biggest thing, really, that is the mental impact that it's had.
Do I make you sing the books of the Bible, or is that...
Do you make me, or do I choose to? Well, here's the thing. You could put it in as an addendum at the end and say, I couldn't let Emily leave without singing the books of the Bible.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's...
No, I'll do it.
I want to sound like a preacher, but I just know that there's so many things in there that's going to resonate with people so many different ways. Thank you for reaching so deeply inside you to share that.
Thank you for having me to talk. It's important to talk about it. And, you know, I'm in a place now where I can talk about it and it's not going to kind of bring up too much stuff for me. So, you know, it's good to talk is the message. Now, do you want me to sing the books of the Bible?
I want you to sing the books of the Bible.
So I'm going to do this because I'm going to prove to you, how long it's lasted in my brain. But you can see I've got no reference. There's nothing in front of me that's telling me what the books are. Yeah. Are you ready? This is my outro. Here we go. Pressure. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus and Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth and Samuel, Kings and Kings, Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Solomon, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, Acts, Romans and Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, Thessalonians, Timothy, Titus, Philemon, Hebrew, James and Peter, John and Jude, and Revelation.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.